Okay, hello everybody. My name is Meredith Barrett. I'm the Vice President of Science and Research at Propeller Health, and I'm really excited to tell you today about an innovative partnership that we have going in Louisville, Kentucky, where we're trying to reduce asthma burden across the community as well as re-envision asthma surveillance. And here are my disclosures. So asthma continues to be both a health and an economic burden across the U.S. 25 million people have asthma, and the prevalence is increasing every year. Of those, over 60% of them are uncontrolled, and this uncontrolled asthma leads to a lot of healthcare utilizations as well as lost productivity. So we're paying about $50 billion a year in an annual healthcare spend. And asthma is a very complicated disease, very complex. It involves your genetic profile, your exposure history over your life course, behavior, your emotional state. But there's an undeniable link between asthma and the environment. And so we have a rich literature that explores indoor air exposures like dust and allergens, pet dander, et cetera, within locations, so homes, schools, workplaces that influence asthma. We also know a lot about outdoor air exposure as well, so pollution, air pollution, poor air quality levels, pollen, industrial pollution, et cetera. So these are some of the issues we very much understand how that influences people's asthma, but it continues to be a challenge. And one of the challenges is that traditional asthma surveillance data has its limitations. And so typically we use healthcare utilization data, claims data, or patient-reported data. So that comes from diaries or surveys. And these types of data actually have a fair number of issues. One, they're always retrospective, so they're looking back in time. They're definitely not real-time data. And oftentimes there's a lag. So the data could be collected 5 years, and then there may be 2, 3, 4, 5 years before the data is actually publicly accessible for research. Secondly, it has a low spatial resolution. So these data are aggregated, could be aggregated at a city or a county or state or even national level. So you really lose that geographic specificity. And lastly, they can also incorporate a lot of recall error. So you're really relying on the quality of a patient's memory and remembering the event they had 6 months ago. I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning. I could certainly not really remember the fine details of when I had an asthma attack 6 months ago, where was I, how was I feeling, where exactly, or the severity of the event. And when it comes to an individual level, the record-taking for individual asthma is actually quite burdensome as well for the patient. So you have these asthma diaries in which you keep track of events and symptoms. It ends up taking a lot of time. Patients are really busy or they just forget, and so they don't keep track of these events and symptoms over time. And what ends up happening is oftentimes these diaries are filled out, scribbled in, filled out in the parking lot of the doctor's office, and so you're really incorporating a lot of recall error there. So the bottom line is that there are a lot of holes in both individual and community level asthma data collection. And so I'm excited to talk today about a case study occurring in Louisville, Kentucky, in which we're really trying to kind of re-envision data collection on asthma, both at an individual level and at a community level. And it's an exciting public-private partnership. Louisville, Kentucky is a fascinating place to do this work because it has a very heavy burden of asthma. So it has a long history of air pollution, industrial air pollution, starting back to World War II when it became a hub for rubber production in the U.S. And the history of air pollution combined with high levels of allergens means that there's a heavy burden of asthma in Louisville. Over 15% of adults in Louisville have asthma, which is almost double the national prevalence. And so it's been considered, recognized as one of the most challenging places to live in the United States with asthma. And the city of Louisville knows this. They know that this health burden really has an impact on their economic vitality in the city. And they want to address it, but they don't necessarily have the data or the insight to be able to really dig into this issue. And so that led to this innovative public-private partnership. The city of Louisville actually approached Propeller Health to be able to use their wireless data platforms to be able to collect the data to sort of reinvent asthma surveillance across the region. And so with funding from the Foundation for a Healthy Kentucky and Norton Healthcare, we were able to begin this partnership about a year and a half ago. And what grew out of that core partnership was actually a really exciting sort of innovative, collaborative ecosystem across the region. So bringing in community-based organizations in the school district and Walgreens pharmacies, and as well as other nonprofits in the area. And the collaboration was recognized by IBM as one of their Smarter Cities Challenge winners. And so the specific objectives of the program occur on two scales, and it's really to improve asthma outcomes, but on two scales. The first is on individual scales, so reducing asthma symptoms and improving control, and that's really through mechanisms of improving self-management and awareness of one's data, of one's asthma patterns. The second is on a community level, so using this passively collected data to better understand what's going on in asthma across the community. And we do that by taking the individual level data, aggregating it, and then exploring temporal patterns in inhaler use. So how frequently are asthma attacks occurring throughout Louisville region, and looking at patterns of peaks of use by day and by season, and then correlating that with different environmental drivers. So what's really driving these temporal patterns? Secondly, we can also use these data to explore spatial patterns in asthma inhaler use throughout the region. So we can take that data, look at certain regions where we might see hot spots of asthma, so a high density of asthma inhaler usage, and then again try to explore what's driving that and use this data to inform interventions. And the downstream goal is to be able to not only improve individual level asthma and symptoms and control, identify environmental drivers across the community that may be also influencing asthma, and eventually reduce the health burden as well as the economic burden of asthma on Louisville. So a lot of the passive data collection occurred using the Propeller Health System, which, as you can see here, there's a little blue sensor which snaps onto the top of an asthma rescue inhaler. And when the patient goes to use their inhaler, the button is depressed, and the sensor is actually able to capture the date and time and GPS location of use. And so this is really important for asthmatics because they oftentimes use their inhalers when they're experiencing symptoms, and this often happens in the time and at the time and place of exposure. And so using that geographic location and the time, we're able to pull in relevant environmental data for each event. And so the intervention also used the Propeller Health System, combining, so taking that data, which is collected from the inhaler sensors, and then doing analytics behind the scenes and providing the data back to the subject in the study. So all of a sudden, they're able to passively collect their own data about their asthma. It's correlated to environmental drivers, and they're able to see all of this data, their triggers and symptoms, their trajectory over time, whether they're improving their control or not. They're able to see that through a mobile app and as well as a web platform, and we're able to give them actionable feedback through emails and text alerts as well. So we set this up with a pre-post study design. So after enrollment, we had a month during which we were really collecting baseline data on each subject. And so during that time, each subject would have the sensor on their inhaler. So we were collecting information about where and when they were having their asthma attack events, but they were not receiving any of the data. So they were cut off from the data. So that was for the first month, just really to get an idea of their baseline level of asthma control. And then after the first month, we switched on the intervention. So then they're getting all of the actionable feedback and all of the data. They see their patterns. They're able to see how they're doing over time. And that data collection occurred for 13 months. We did a 13-month window because we wanted to be able to collect a full year, at more than a year, so that we could then look at seasonal variation. So recruitment for the study occurred throughout Walgreens pharmacies. Somebody could go in when they're going to get a refill on their prescription and sign up for the program. Inclusion criteria were fairly flexible, so they needed to have a current diagnosis of asthma as well as a current prescription for a rescue medication for asthma. And we really tried to disperse the enrollment across different zip codes across Jefferson County. And this was really at the request of the Public Health Department in Louisville. They, as you can see here, in the darker brown areas where we have historically high asthma hospitalization rates, they really wanted to get high sampling in that area so they could start to better understand what was going on in these regions and how to better address it. And so we had a fairly diverse population, 238 people enrolled, and 33% African American, 53% white. We had both adults and children, and we were able to collect information on in-home exposures, so smoking exposure as well as pet exposures, both of which are very important to consider for asthma. And just diving into some of our early results, excitingly, we saw that rescue inhaler use did decline significantly when comparing the control period, so that initial baseline period and the intervention period. We actually saw a 43% decline in asthma symptoms per day, and this is all adjusted by the number of people in the study on those days. So you can see the steady decline over the first 90 days. Secondly, we looked at improved control. And again, in comparing the control period and the intervention period, we saw an improvement, pretty drastic improvements, 48% reduction in the proportion of the population that was considered very poorly controlled. So those people were improving their level of control over the course of the study. So now, kind of zooming back out to the community level and looking at the temporal patterns in inhaler use, we were able to use data from over 9 months, which across all of this entire population added up to more than 3,500 different unique inhaler events. And so we were curious about looking at the temporal patterns in these inhaler events, looking at the number of inhaler events per day or throughout a season and how that was correlated with environmental predictors. And so we looked at a number of weather predictors, temperature, humidity, precipitation, as well as air quality, so air pollution, pollen, and mold counts. We could also look at wind speed and direction and different temporal predictors as well. And so this is what it looks like. So this is inhaler events across Louisville by day, and again, adjusted by the number of people in the study, active in the study per day as well. And so we see kind of a lower trough in the summer with a peak in the late summer, another trough, and then we see the highest peak in mid-September. And this was really interesting to see. It actually aligns with what the patterns that we've seen in Louisville in the past and also aligns with what we've seen in the literature. So it's hypothesized that when school children return to school and start sharing germs and respiratory infections, the number of asthma exacerbation increases. So then we could take this inhaler event by day data and start to look at it at associations with environmental predictors. And what we saw, this asthma signal that we saw, really correlated well with well-known predictors. So predictors that we all know is very well documented in the literature. And so looking at the number of asthma inhaler events per day was positively associated with carbon monoxide, nitrogen dioxide, particulate matter across the region, as well as tree and weed pollen. And what's interesting is then we're also able to, as I mentioned, the wind speed. So as the wind speed increased, we actually saw that was associated with the decreased number of asthma inhaler events, which it makes intuitive sense. The wind is sort of clearing out some of the air pollution potentially. And we also saw that wind direction played an important role as well. So winds from the east and from the south were associated with a higher number of asthma inhaler events per day as well. So, and that's an important thing to remember as we're thinking about directionality and some of our spatial data. So now moving into the spatial analysis, we used 844 inhaler events with location data, and that was across 78 individuals, and these occurred all over Jefferson County. And first, we just wanted to describe and explore where these asthma events were occurring. And so we did a kernel density estimates on where these events were occurring, looking for areas of high density. So as you can see here in the redder, the warmer colors indicate the highest density of inhaler events, and they were significantly clustered. And what's not that surprising is we actually see one of these clusters align fairly well with a region in Jefferson County where we see the highest historic rates of asthma hospitalizations. But that doesn't describe or doesn't necessarily explain the cluster on the right. So one of the criticisms or suggestions is that people think that the geographic signal in these asthma inhaler events is actually just a reflection of people using their inhalers at home. But what we found is that that actually is not the case. People are using their inhalers in a very dispersed fashion across Jefferson County. And what we see is that the second, the more eastern cluster actually occurs over an area in which we have very few people enrolled in those zip codes. So that doesn't necessarily explain it either. And so it really points towards further exploration in terms of looking at exposures and understanding other spatial predictors of these asthma patterns. And so what we did was, because of the long history of air pollution and exposure in Louisville, we wanted to start to gather a lot of that data. And so we went to public databases. Kentucky actually has an amazing geographic information system network where a lot of this data is free and publicly available online. And so we started pulling the data sources that we thought could play a role in exposure throughout the county. And so we looked at traffic density on some of their highest traffic density roads. We looked at other transportation networks like railroads and airports. We also pulled in known emission points. So some of the highest density of industrial emitters, which is here in the sort of the western part of Jefferson County. We also pulled in data on active mines and power facilities. So we were able to pull in all of this information, and what's not that surprising is that here in the western part of Jefferson County, this is a neighborhood called Rubbertown, which was actually the location of much of the industrial pollution and has historically the worst air quality in Louisville. We see just east of there one of our highest density of asthma inhaler uses. We're still, curious about what's going on in the eastern cluster, which actually occurs over one of the more affluent areas in Louisville. But the next step is really going to combine both the spatial and temporal data to look at how the pollution and air quality data is interacting with the wind direction and speed. Because if you remember, winds from the south did play a role in increasing the number of asthma events per day. So that's something that we're going to be looking into. So we're also able to add all of this other additional spatial information, looking at neighborhoods, so adding in population density and different socioeconomic measures. So poverty and educational attainment, home values and crime rates as well. And different environmental information. So what are the land use regimes in this area? How green is this area? Is it close to parks or recreation areas? And as well as other study factors. So we're really able to add a lot of richness to the analysis. And another application of this data is actually in generating predictive models. So how can we use this data to try to help Louisville decide where they should target their efforts and what kind of efforts they should implement, what kind of interventions. And so we used a technique called ecological niche modeling, which is used extensively in ecology to predict the distributions of endangered species. And it actually applies well here because we can take known presence locations, so areas where we know that there's a high density of inhaler usages, and then try to understand the environmental characteristics there and then build a predictive model. And so just very quickly, so we take the known inhaler use points, we put it into a geographic information system with a number of different environmental layers. I believe we had 40 different environmental layers that we were exploring. Extract the environmental data at each of those points. So each of those points has a very rich sort of description of its environmental quality. And then we're able to build a predictive model using background pseudo-absences. And the output is this probability distribution, which if you see the map here, the red colors indicate a very high likelihood that an asthma event could occur there based upon the environmental suitability. So it could be an area with high air pollution and a lot of traffic, for example. And what's exciting about this technique is you can then take that probability model and extrapolate it into new environmental or geographic space. And that comes into play in a little bit. So I will talk about that in a second. This is one of our maps of prediction maps of the probability of inhaler use based upon environmental suitability. So if you'll see the areas in brown here have a high risk of asthma presence there because of the environmental conditions at that point. And what's useful here is that for Louisville, we can then use this information to target where they do their intervention. So this is the downtown region, which would be a natural next step for interventions. They could perhaps instigate regulations to improve air filtration in buildings in this area, or they could really attempt to nail down some of their traffic problems in the area. So an application of this is, again, being able to take this predictive model and extrapolate it into other environmental space. So it allows us to kind of play out intervention scenarios. So working with Louisville, we're able to say, okay, well, what if Louisville reduced traffic density in this area? Or what if they were able to start a massive greening campaign in downtown? Or what if they were able to reduce particulate matter across the entire region? What would that mean for the asthma risk across the entire region? And this is actually really helpful information for them right now because they're updating their strategic plan, they're implementing a smart growth implementation network, as well as looking at their transportation networks. And so it's very valuable information for them now. So just to kind of play out one of these scenarios, we looked at, well, what happens if we reduce particulate matter by 10% across the region? So this was before intervention. And after intervention, we actually saw a 27% reduction in the areas at high risk for asthma across the region. So this is just another way to look at it. You see the areas that reduced in their risk in green. You can kind of see it play out here. So that was kind of a whirlwind tour of the applicability of this data, but really, being able to passively collect this data, re-envision asthma surveillance, and apply it both in an individual context as well as in a community context to reduce symptoms and improve control, as well as really explore these temporal and spatial patterns in asthma. And so it's a useful technique because asthma really is an indicator not only of an individual health but also of community health. And so when we're able to look at population level asthma patterns, we're able to develop a community level asthma information system and use that to not only reduce individual asthma burden but also improve community level predictors. So thank you very much. Yes.
Thanks for the presentation. Just a couple quick questions. I was wondering if you guys still collected any kind of qualitative data about the individual the participants using to kind of maybe rule out all positives from other types of events.
Yep.
And then also within that, did you have the geographic location of participants or role that weren't using their data, so you could use that to inform the model as well?
So, great questions. We do, especially soon after a person is enrolled, we look at their patterns in inhaler usage. And we're actually able to contact them to make sure that an event is in fact true. And so if we see, 10 puffs going in a short amount of time, we're able to assess whether that's a real event and perhaps even group them so it doesn't over inflate the data. And then your question about background data, we would love to have that information because then you could really build a time exposure model for each individual. But because of security concerns and also because of battery life in the sensor, we decided that it wasn't going to be feasible at this point. Yeah, but we would love eventually to be able to have that data.
Did you look at any of the biological predisposition, like family grouping or family heritability that would be indicative of
clustering? We actually weren't able to do that. This is more of a community intervention, community level intervention. In some of our other programs where it's clinically integrated, and so the patient is using the system with their doctor, it's connected with the electronic medical record, then we're able to really pull in that kind of more deep medical history, which I think is it's critical to really understanding somebody's asthma. This was kind of a more high-level type of approach, but in the future, that's exactly what we'll try to do.
I have two somewhat related questions. And you report, I think, it's about a 20-30% reduction. Mm-hmm. How do you know that it's not, that wasn't just like a regression to the mean when people entering the study more like that, since like ER visits
right.
With asthma? And then for the somewhat related question is, what did you do with regard to looking at controlling medication use? Because another reason that people use more rescue medications that do not need to control medication.
Right. So yes, regression to the mean is certainly something that we're addressing or looking at. Also just the fact of being involved in a study. So Hawthorne effects play out here as well. And so what we're looking at, we're trying to address that by collecting the information over the 13-month time period. So being able to look at that season again, look at individual trends over time. Because of the pre-post intervention, it's not as easily assessed. But in some of our other programs, we're doing a randomized control trial in Sacramento right now. And in that type of data, we're really able to look more specifically at individual trends over time and figure out what really is going on. So, and then the second question is about controller medications. The system now does collect information on controller medications, so we're able to have a sensor on both controller and rescue medications to look at improvements in adherence. And so we believe that's one of the main mechanisms for improvement, and we now have that set up. Unfortunately, in this study, I believe only maybe 10% of the patients, of the subjects in the study, had a sensor on their controller medication as well. But actually, the incidence of subjects with controller medications in the study was not that high, which is an indication of the need to improve asthma management plans and use data to inform asthma management plans and get people who are supposed to be on controller medications on the meds. But looking at patterns and adherence and how that relates to rescue events is now one of our main, we're able to do that across our other studies. Right. And that's been one of the, main challenges that we've been dealing with over the last year and a half, and it's been something that we tried to tackle really early on. So almost immediately we translated the entire system into Spanish. So we're thinking about language barriers. And we also try to present all of the data in very visual formats. And so, numbers and visual formats to try to make it so that people of all health literacies can address it or can understand the information. In terms of communicating some of the reports and the data, we have tried everything, and so we're willing to meet the patient or the subject exactly where they are. So they're able to request communication by text, by email messages, by snail mail, by somebody coming to their home and chatting with them, or by a phone call. So it really, we're able to sort of tailor the communication so that it fits what they're looking for and what they need.
I'm wondering how many
Retention in the study is an issue in any study, and we had 235 initially and 150 completed the study. So a fairly good amount, and the temporal and spatial analysis is reduced to those active participants who maintained throughout the study. Absolutely, yeah. So people who withdraw their consent, obviously we can't use their data anymore, but people who have just, sometimes some of the issues in losing a patient through this study is actually just from syncing issues in the battery. So if people aren't syncing every 3 weeks or so, sometimes their sensors can go dark and we lose their data that way. But then they pop back in later on. So we could use that data, and that's one of our focus areas for the next year or so, is to really understand who the patients are that remain in the study and who don't, how are they using the sensor differently, and what does their data look like as well.
Cost to the patient, cost to the provider, cost to the researcher?
Yeah, so it varies. We're not selling directly to consumers now. in this program, it was all completely free to the city of Louisville. It was funded through grants from two of the local foundations. So people could sign up. They got a gift card for signing up, and it was a free program. In terms of commercial programs, we tend to sell to sort of larger health systems and insurance, you know, big payers that have a vested interest in keeping people healthy and out of the hospital, out of the emergency department. But we do have a beta testing program for individuals, and that is a free program. So if anybody's interested, they can sign up, and all we ask is that you provide us feedback on your user experience. We also develop academic research partnerships with people who are, you know, asking targeted questions that we're really interested in as well. So we work together and submit grants and do research partnerships that way. It really depends based on the number and what the questions that are being asked are, but you know, generally the sensor is a one-time cost of about $50, I believe, and then there's a subscription model that per month, which is about $15, that covers all of the data analytics, the servers, you know, protecting of the protected health information on the back end.
Is that $15 per subject?
Yes.
Did you recruit at all Walgreens?
At all Walgreens?
Yes.
We recruited about 50% of the Walgreens. Yeah.
Do you think the spatial distribution of Walgreens versus access to other pharmacies might be affecting the distribution of the
subject? That's a great question. And I mean, it's something that we tried to address and really trying to get Walgreens spread out throughout the county. But absolutely, I mean, that's a consideration. We also recruited through some private asthma clinics, so it balanced it out a little bit and at some community events. So it wasn't 100% through Walgreens, but, I mean, it's a great point.
I'm wondering if you work with any respiratory therapists or PCPs to sort of get feedback on the feasibility of using the mobile app or other reports for improving asthma management.
Yeah, great question. So in this program, we did work with, through the private asthma clinics and through some of the MDs at the local university, at the medical school, we have been working with them, and some of their patients are on the program, so we get feedback from them. Some of our other programs, is particularly the randomized control trial going on now in Sacramento, is very clinically integrated, and so it is very much embedded in the physician workflow and with care managers and asthma educators, and so we're getting a lot of feedback that way through a program that's more clinically focused. But yeah, that's a great point, and it's something that we're constantly, you know, incorporating feedback and improving, especially in how to best integrate into the electronic medical record, how to best customize the system so that it can integrate with different care models. Great, thank you very much.